Hey guys, welcome to the show. It's Hemel and Brian.
Hello! Excited to be here recording episode 3 of our Keanu Reeves filmology themed podcast.
Welcome guys. Today we're going to be talking about a lesser known Keanu Reeves movie. Is that right to call it lesser known?
I feel like it's, I had never seen it before. Mm-hmm. I was vaguely aware of it by reputation. I feel like it's definitely a cult classic.
A cult classic. Another cult classic in the Keanu canon, My Own Private Idaho.
Can I say something about this movie and the experience of watching it? I had never seen it. And you said, oh, it's so good, we have to do that one. I was like, yeah, sure, whatever. I was only faintly aware of it, and I knew it was Gus Van Sant, but I'd only ever seen his, like, Hollywood movies, like Good Will Hunting. I was like, oh, it's going to be this, just a portrait of troubled young people going about their lives. But it was a crazy, weird art house film, which I'm all right with. But when you're completely unprepared for that, when you're not expecting it, it's a very disconcerting experience.
Wait, so let's kick it off with expectation. I think that's a really good way to get into the film. We had talked initially about what movies that we were going to do for the podcast, and I really wanted to do My Own Private Idaho because it's such a departure from a lot of the stuff that Keanu Reeves does.
And how?
But I thought I specifically told you, or that I must have mentioned, that it's about gay hustlers. Did that come as a surprise to you?
No. I was 100% on board for Gay Hustlers. It was not the content. It was the stylistic choices of the even the opening, the title sequences looked like they were done in Word Perfect. Yeah. And I was like, what the hell? Is this the right movie? This looks like a student film. And there's just a lot of there's a lot of things that happened that I was not expecting. I watched it with my wife, and one of us would turn to the other, and I would turn to her and say, "What the hell?" every 5 minutes, and then she would say, "What is this movie again?" So we were not ready for the experience.
Well, shout out to Wendy for being a good sport and watching it too.
She said, "Is this the movie you're doing for the podcast?"
She's so lovely, and that's a very good impression of her. I want to get to initial reaction for My Own Private Idaho, but before we do that, can we sum up the plot? Gay hustlers on a road trip?
There were clearly two movies thrown together with very little regard for how well they work together. One is Gay Hustlers on a Road Trip, the sad, tragic tale of River Phoenix, who's a sad, tragic gay hustler who makes poor life decisions. Juxtaposed within that film was a modern-day adaptation of Shakespeare yeah. featuring Keanu Reeves doing faux Shakespearean dialogue.
It definitely feels like more than two movies, honestly.
Blew my mind when that happened.
It feels like multiple movies crammed into one movie, but I think it works.
So how would you summarize the part of the movie that is not Keanu doing Shakespeare?
I would summarize it honestly, as a traditional, unrequited love story.
Well, for our listeners who have not seen the film yet, what happens in the movie?
Okay, very good question. It is about young River Phoenix. He is a male prostitute starts off in either Portland or Seattle. Starts in Seattle, somewhere in the Pacific Northwest.
And he's looking rough. He looks like a street dweller.
He does. He looks like a street dweller. And it's about him and his core group of male hustler friends and his journey to find his mom and the weird romance that he has with his heterosexual best friend.
Who is Keanu Reeves. Heteroflexible, but yeah.
Heteroflexible.
Largely straight.
Yeah, largely straight.
But I don't think it was about him looking for his mom. That seemed very incidental. He's looking for some, he wants someone to give a shit about him and take care of him. He feels like maybe his mom might do that because no one else will.
Yes.
But he never finds her.
Yes, and I mean, the whole movie, honestly, is devastating. I was not prepared for how much I was going to respond to it the second time around.
So you'd seen it before?
Well, I'd seen it before when I was a kid.
This is not a good movie for children. How old were you?
So this came out in 91.
Yeah, you were in the eighth
grade. I was in about eighth grade. I definitely remember watching this movie. I think eighth grade is probably a little young for this.
I think some of my friends, I guess I was in high school, early high school. Some of my friends were into this movie, and I never saw it. I had a vague sense of what it was about. But so you summarized it's not a plot-driven movie at all.
Not a plot-driven movie.
But at some point, a third of the way into it, suddenly, with no warning, all of the characters are speaking in faux Shakespearean.
Yeah.
Maybe it's actual Shakespeare. I don't know. It's like it's Henry the Fourth.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a Henry loose adaptation of Henry the Fourth is what they keep saying.
And but there's this street guy. He's the only older guy, and he's mm-hmm. the Falstaff character. And the movie definitely, there's a very specific thing it does where suddenly Keanu Reeves, who's been the supporting character, becomes the main character, and he's delivering all the Shakespearean dialogue. And it even feels like a stage play, like they're jumping around the set in that sort of overblown way.
Right.
And then it stops.
Yeah.
And they don't do it again until the very end.
Yes.
That's so weird. It is a weird thing to do.
It's super weird. There's lots of these weird interludes, I guess. You know how in an action movie, there's set pieces, and the set pieces are the big chases and the explosions and things like that?
Yes, for sure.
And some
of Keanu's other work, in fact.
But in this movie, the set pieces are these weird Shakespearean diatribes.
I guess so.
That they go on, right? These are like, they're just like, they pop in. There's the overall story. And then, like in an action movie, you would have explosions and stuff like that. Gus Van Sant just throws explosions of Shakespeare. Very good.
I didn't not like it, but it takes you, if you're not expecting it at all, and it starts happening before you realize what's happening, and you're like, why are they all talking so stupid? And then you're like, oh, are they doing Shakespeare? And then it just stops, and they're back to completely naturalistic dialogue.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is mind-blowing.
It is. It's definitely multiple movies that he squished together. I don't know. I think it does work, though. I think the end result does make it work.
I don't know that I enjoyed it, but I'm glad I saw it. And it was one of those movies that I was thinking about it after I saw it.
Mm-hmm.
Some movies, you finish them, and then you're right out of your brain.
The movie comes out at a time when you were not getting a lot of movies like this, right? There's no movies coming out in 1991 that were exploring male desire and focused on gay street hustlers. And one of the questions I had about this that we can talk about now or we can talk about later is, would this movie get made today?
You know, Wendy observed, my lovely wife, observed that it had a very timeless quality. Like, it did not feel dated. It did not feel like a movie from, 25 years ago. It felt like it could have come out yesterday. Were they junkies? Was this just their life because they had no options?
No.
There's a couple scenes of, River Phoenix is snorting coke, but that's it.
There's one scene of them doing cocaine, but it doesn't say that this lifestyle is dependent on an addiction, right? It doesn't make any excuses for what's happening here.
Yeah,
right?
And I didn't know if that was are they junkies and this is what they have to do?
No.
Or no, this is just their life. This is how they live.
That's the thing about this movie and what makes it so crazy and interesting is it doesn't say that the reason they're male hustlers is because they've been forced into this life because of opioid addiction or anything like that. It makes no excuses for it. It's just how they roll, especially Keanu Reeves, who is a wealthy character, right? I think
yes,
his name is Scott.
Scott.
His name is Scott. He's the
it
mayor's son.
Very hard to remember the characters' names watching
very
this.
Very hard. Because they have such generic, normal names. Scott and Mike.
Right.
Yeah. But Scott is a wealthy...
Is he the mayor's son? I realized he was some sort of scion.
Yeah, he's the mayor's son.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, he's the mayor's son. So he's here by choice, right? He doesn't need to be here. He's going to inherit a lot of money.
Yes. Which in the end of the film, he does.
Yes.
He returns to the ruling class.
Mike is here out of circumstance, out of a lack of other options, I guess, right? Like you said, he's more of your typical, what you would think about
a
with a street kid.
He's got nobody gets him.
Yeah, and he's kind of turned into this life to make money.
So you said the question was, would they make this film today? Do you think they wouldn't make this film today?
I think that you don't see movies like this that don't have any clear genre or definition, right? I don't know how you would characterize this. It's too simplistic to say this is a gay film or...
I don't think it was a gay film.
I don't think so either.
And in fact, I was reading. There's the only one scene where the sexuality of the characters is central, and that's this campfire scene. They're stranded out in the middle of nowhere. Keanu and Mike and Scott, Keanu and River, and River Phoenix professes in his own sort of shambly, weird way his feelings for Keanu, and Keanu is just like, well, I only sleep with men for money. I read up on that scene, and that was actually not written that way. River Phoenix rewrote it to have that be more explicit because he wanted that to be in the movie in a way that it was not in the script.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
Also, there's two long shots, and they're cut up, of two street hustlers, like, telling their, like, kind of fucked up stories.
And they're real.
Yeah, those are just interviews that he cut into the movie.
Yeah, so it's actually part documentary as well as Shakespearean drama. And, I mean, kudos to Gus Van Sant for throwing all of that together.
Yeah, hell of a mess of a movie.
But my overall point with this is that if you are making movies these days, especially with, like, the birth of Netflix and Amazon Prime and all these different ways to distribute films, I still don't think this movie gets made. Even if you need to reach a smaller audience, this movie still doesn't get made because it doesn't follow any conventions of any genre, really.
I saw Sorry to Bother You. Have you seen that?
I have not seen that.
It's incredible. You have to see it. But I was sitting in the and it was over. I had that same thought. I was like, I have never seen a movie like this in a theater. And you're right. You realize how much every movie, whether they're good or bad, have to be, you know, slotted into their place so they can be sold.
And this one is not like that. And I think it is I think it's a product of the fact that it was made in the early 90s. What did you think about that campfire scene? Because I thought that was my favorite part of the film.
It was. I feel like that was the emotional center of the film.
Yeah.
I thought that was the only scene that didn't feel weird. Like, every other scene was touched with surreality, even in the sense of, like, what's going to happen next? Is a house going to fall on them? They kept cutting all the shots of fish jumping, and every sex scene was done in that weird, like,
stop motion,
budget time-lapse photography. What was the question? The campfire scene. Well, see, this is a great question, because I feel like we've been beating around the bush. What our listeners are here for is to talk Keanu.
Yeah.
Is this a Keanu Reeves film?
So, when I first saw it, I will say that the only thing I fixated on was River Phoenix, because River Phoenix's performance is so fantastic in the film. But watching it for the second time and knowing that it was for the podcast and paying more attention to Keanu, the movie does not work without Keanu Reeves in it. So, yes, I think it is a Keanu Reeves film.
Yeah, River Phoenix is the protagonist of the first movie in the movie.
Yeah.
Keanu is the protagonist of the second movie that is in the movie.
I was honestly wondering if he only had, like, a minor role to play in it, and I had, you know, overinflated how much he was in the film. But seeing it, I realized that he's actually a very central character in the film.
Oh, yeah, he drives the plot.
He drives the plot. He's the other half of the film, so it's very much a Keanu film.
And I would say he's awful in the movie. He's not a good person, right? He betrays people.
What?
He's terrible.
What?
Think of what he does. He betrays people. He abandons people. First of all, he commits this terrible betrayal of River. He goes with him to Italy.
Okay, well, let's back up to the first betrayal. Let's get to the second betrayal second.
Scott.
The first betrayal is when he's got an older gentleman friend named Bob, and he says he wants to play a joke on Bob, and then
Bob is the Falstaff character from the Shakespearean sub-movie. Yes.
But he steals Bob's money. He steals money that Bob was going to steal, basically.
He robs Bob.
Right. So there's that. So that's the first betrayal.
And that whole scene is bizarre.
Yeah.
For some reason, all the hustlers dress up in pink robes,
and
they're chanting, and they're robbing a band who's walking through a field with money, and then Keanu and River rob them.
It's very, but it is very Shakespearean, right? It is very much like something that you would see in a Shakespearean drama.
Yeah, it's very, like, overblown and stylized, and so he betrays his father. His father seems like an asshole, but he still betrays him.
How does he betray his dad?
His whole life. The lifestyle he's chosen, the lifestyle of the itinerant, possibly junky, gay street hustler, he's only doing it to betray his father, to stick it to his dad.
I think it's a rebellion of sorts, but I don't know if it's a betrayal.
Rebellion is betrayal.
All right, and the last one. I don't think of it as a betrayal, but what were you saying about it?
Well, he leaves, so he goes with River to look for his mom.
Yeah.
Which is this completely misbegotten quest, and it fails. And then he knows that River Phoenix is in love with him, but he abandons him for this woman that he meets. So that's his first betrayal of Scott. Scott, right? River Phoenix
Mike,
is Scott?
Mike.
Yeah, sorry, Jesus. I'm just going to call them River and Keanu.
Yeah.
And then in the end, all his old pals see him return to his glory. He has ascended back to the oligarchy, and they're like, it's you, it's the guy, it's Keanu. And he's like, get away from me. I don't know any of you people.
I understand that. I don't think the scene where he leaves River Phoenix is betrayal. I don't see it as betrayal. I see it as unrequited love. Like, I think that River Phoenix plays this wounded character, like you said, is so desperate for somebody to notice him, to take care of him, to tell him that he's worth something. And all of that is the job of Keanu Reeves for like 3.5 years or something, right? He says they're like on the back of a motorbike and he asks how long they've known each other and it's somewhere around 3 to 4 years.
Yeah, but I didn't get the impression that they were together. He's just sort of drifting in and out of his life.
Right, drifting in and out of each other's life. But through that process, he's leaned on him quite a bit. And Keanu has just decided that he's going to make the transition back to the real world, to the normal world, that he can slip into very easily.
Yeah,
right?
And he was always planning to go back.
And he was always planning to go back. And he's very upfront about that. He tells them that he's only here until he gets money.
Yeah, he's a tourist.
He's a tourist. He's only here until he gets his money. And that just makes it more bittersweet. I never thought it was betrayal. I think
he's selfish.
He's selfish, but he's also the scene at the end where the Falstaff character, Bob, goes into the fancy restaurant to talk to Keanu. Keanu says, I've loved you more than I did my own father, and I might come back to this world, but for now, get away from me.
Right.
Like, he's very cognizant of all the role that he's playing. And right now, he's playing the role of the, responsible young man who now has a wife. Or girlfriend or whatever.
So what was your favorite Keanu your favorite Keanu moment of the film?
My favorite Keanu moment of the film, that's very good. I do think it's the campfire scene. I think that Keanu Reeves is not known for being an emotional actor, right? Mm-hmm. Every time he says something genuine or sincere, you kind of want to laugh. And he never plays that. But in this film and in this scene, it totally works.
He's not, I don't know, open or tender per se in that scene, but he's
very empathetic.
He makes it easy for River to go through what he's going through.
Yeah,
I think I don't know
what
if
is
I
yours.
Well, I really like them. There's a really funny moment in it where they stole a motorbike and they're driving down the highway and it's stalled out and a cop pulls up and River Phoenix wigs out and runs away through the field and Keanu just talks to the cop comes up and he's just like, hey, do you know how to fix motorbikes? And the guy's like, where'd your friend go? And he goes, I don't know. I guess he doesn't like cops. He's just completely blasé. Like, nothing in the world bothers him. And that's the whole shtick of the character.
Yeah.
But I think that's the moment when it's like he's completely unbothered by their objectively terrible circumstances.
And that, I think you just nailed what is a lot of Keanu Reeves' roles, is that nothing bothers him. That seems
yes,
to
he's
be...
he's unflappable.
He's very unflappable.
In Point Break, the moments when he was worse is when he was being flapped.
Yeah.
And that's when his terrible acting shone through.
As long as he remains unflappable, he's very believable.
Here's a question. I don't want to jump back to the plot, but the last scene of the film...
Yes.
So River Phoenix is lying in the highway, in a field. I don't remember how he got there.
Mm-hmm.
And this car stops, because he's narcoleptic, so he keeps passing out. This car stops, and you're like, oh, someone's going to help him. And they come, and they take his shoes and his bag and drive away, which was great. And then the camera pulls way back.
Yeah.
Another car comes, someone gets out, puts him in the car, and drives away.
Yes.
From a great distance, which is all we are given, it appears to be Keanu.
I was hoping you would say that.
Do you think it was him?
I don't know, and I've been thinking about this for...
Gus Van Sant, if you're listening, can you please tweet at us and let us know if that was Keanu?
I had on my list the ending, and I didn't want to bring it up because I was worried that if I said it, I would sound too much like a romantic. So I was really curious to see... I think your interpretation of the ending really says a lot about how you view life,
And how you view Keanu.
And how you think about that character. I would hope, like, desperately hope, because I love these characters so much, that it is Keanu who has come back to River. And that's the tension at the end of the movie, is that you get the feeling that there is a chance that he remembers his friends.
Yeah, he's his family. He's all the family he has.
And yeah.
There's something about, like, Keanu Reeves' physical presence that is very distinct.
Yeah.
And it's a really long shot. Like, the camera's like 500 yards away.
Yes.
But it's still, like, all you can see is, like, the hair color and the body language.
And you think that there's just enough hope that it could be him.
Yeah, maybe that's the only thing, is that who else would it be?
Yeah, I mean, it could just be another random stranger who's not a jerk.
Here's something this just occurred to me, but I really want to get into it now.
Okay.
In the movie Point Break, starring Keanu Reeves,
Patrick Swayze.
Well, that's not important right now. One of the supporting roles is played by Anthony Kiedis of the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
I was wondering this. Is it Flea?
Yeah, that's Flea. So Flea plays one of the gay street hustlers, and he's just as like bad and hammy an actor as Anthony Kiedis is. They're just chewing their lines. Is that a random coincidence? Is there some strange thread there?
I'm laughing so hard because I genuinely paused the film and I was like, I'm not going to IMDb this because I want it to be Flea so badly.
Not only did I immediately know it was Flea, in the credits he's listed as Flea.
I didn't watch the credits.
Flea's parents, if you're listening to the podcast, please tweet at us and let us know what his given Christian name is.
I did think, though, I convinced myself most of the way through that it was Flea, and I spent a long time pondering if there was a Red Hot Chili Peppers Keanu Reeves connection that I had missed somewhere in the 90s.
Well, the Chad Smith, the drummer for the Chili Peppers, plays Morpheus in the Matrix trilogy.
Really?
Yeah, people think that it's Lawrence Fishburne, but it's not.
I had no idea.
They CGI'd him to look like Lawrence Fishburne. It really failed. It went over really poorly. Do I get points for knowing the name of the Chili Peppers drummer?
Yeah, I was like, wait, are you serious? I thought for a second you were actually...
I couldn't tell if you were hearing me if I really had you there.
You did have me
there.
So
what were we talking about before we went on the Red Hot Chili Peppers detour? So we want it to be Keanu because that gives us some hope.
We want it to be Keanu because that gives us some hope for both characters. Because the connection... this is why River Phoenix is so good in this. And Keanu Reeves is also really good in this. They're both very good in this. And you have to buy that connection, which I totally bought. Whether it's sexual or not or whatever, right? It is not dependent on that they have a romantic relationship.
Yeah, I would say it's glaringly not sexual. That's what the campfire scene establishes.
Right.
Keanu is not romantically or sexually attracted to him in any way.
No, but he does definitely love him. That is like been established.
Keanu loves River?
I think Keanu does love River.
Maybe in his way.
Not in a romantic, like be my life partner kind of way, but in a... There's so many different little scenes where he takes care of River Phoenix, and that is born out of love. Falls asleep in Rome, and when River Phoenix wakes up, but you know he's discombobulated and he's scared, and then he gets into a cab with Keanu Reeves because Keanu Reeves went to go find a cab, and he says, "What are all these people doing yelling at me?" And he says, "Oh, I told them to look after you."
And in the earlier scene, when we first meet Keanu, River passes out and Keanu covers him with his jacket and kind of drags him to safety.
Yeah.
All right, I buy it.
He definitely loves him. However you want to interpret that is up to you. But for the ending to really work, you've got to buy that connection, which I totally do.
Can we talk about the hair in the film?
Yes, let's talk about Keanu's hair.
Well, first of all, honorable mention goes to River Phoenix's hair, which is dirty and unkempt, but fantastic.
It's just incredible hair.
And he's messing with it, like in every scene, he's pulling his own hair.
It makes me, God, this movie just made me miss River Phoenix a lot.
He was very young when he died, though.
Isn't that really
bad? I did read that, they sent the script, so Gus Van Sant wrote the script and sent it to the agents of these two actors, and Keanu loved it, and River Phoenix's agent wouldn't even give it to him. He's like, well, he's not getting near this shit show of a movie. So, and this seems so crazy, it must be apocryphal, but... Keanu Reeves decided he was going to do the movie, was in Canada. Maybe he's Canadian?
He's Canadian.
Okay, so he's in his family home in Canada, drives on a motorcycle from Canada to Gainesville, Florida, where River Phoenix is with his family, to thrust the script into his hands and say, we have to make this movie.
Are you serious?
Yeah, like a 30,000-mile motorbike ride.
This is why we're doing a Keanu Reeves podcast. This is why I love Keanu Reeves so much.
There's some depth to him.
There's a lot of depth to him. I'm coming around. Wait, what was the question that you had before this?
Keanu's hair.
Oh, right.
It's very good.
We're so bad at staying on topic. I'm sorry.
It's parted, which you wouldn't think would work, but it does work.
Okay, so one thing I want to talk about is how Keanu channels his character through his hair. And I know it sounds ridiculous, but it's so true. This is episode 3 of the podcast. And when you think about Point Break, his hair goes from FBI agent to surfer guy. We talk about Speed, where he has the
reliable, staunch hair.
Yes, very no-nonsense, don't mess with me hair.
If you are listening to the podcast and were a hair designer on any Keanu Reeves movie, please let us know. We would love to talk to you.
I know hair obviously says a lot about characters, but his hair here does so much work for him. Like, it does so much acting.
Yeah, his hair is, it's good. I wish I could do that kind of hair. I don't think mine would do that.
No, but it's, I think that's the kind of hair that Keanu is best known for. It's Bill and Ted hair.
Yeah, Bill and Ted hair is fully floppy, whereas this is sort of gay hustler junkie floppy.
Yeah.
It communicates a different thing.
It does, and it communicates, he's not a junkie, though. He's just a gay hustler.
He's not even a gay hustler. He's not a junkie or a gay hustler. He's just a hustler.
He's just a hustler.
He's in it for the thrills. Like, whatever you have to offer, he will do that thing.
Yeah. Oh, okay, so to circle back to your story about how Keanu drove all the way to Gainesville on a motorbike.
From Canada.
God, I love him. That's love. That's like true love when you jump on a motorbike all the way from Canada to hang out at River Phoenix House. This is a crazy risk for an actor to take. Like, this movie.
Oh, yeah, sure.
During where Keanu was in his career, he had just done Bill and Ted's and he had just done Point Break. And he was on his way to becoming like a bona fide action star.
And he makes a crazy gay hustler art film.
Yes, he does.
Terrible title sequence.
He does a hard pivot and says, I'm going to do this film. Right. And in the context of 1991, so I was reading about this in The Ringer, and I forget the woman who wrote it, but the article is from The Ringer. And she talked about how if male actors do like play, you know, gay roles now, even if they're not technically gay, it's considered some kind of like street cred that they kind of reaffirm their heterosexuality.
It's a macho thing. It's to a play macho a character thing. That reads gay. All
yes, right. Like, it's a macho thing to play a character that reads gay, which happens now. It's like, oh, he's so brave, he's so open, he decided to play a gay character. 1991, that is not the case.
No, no, for sure.
Right? You can torpedo your career if you say, I'm going to play a hustler who has like sex with men. Whether or not the character is gay is irrelevant, but he's like, fuck it, I'm gonna do this anyway. That's
so
incredible.
Yeah, props to Keanu for the boldness of this role.
Yeah, for saying that, screw it.
So Emma, let me ask you, where does My Own Private Idaho fall for you in the definitive ranking of Keanu films?
That's a very good question.
Need a number, we just need a sense.
So,
what is this, the ultimate Keanu film? Is this the Keanu film? Is this the text from which Keanu can best be understood?
It's not the Keanu text, but I do think it is. I honestly did not expect to like this so much. I was really surprised that I liked it as much as I did. So, and he's so wonderful in it. I will say that it's at least a top five Keanu film. So.
When he does the Shakespeare scenes, is he trying to act badly or is he unable to act well?
I don't think he's able to act well. Have you watched Much Ado About Nothing where he actually does Shakespeare?
No, I have not.
He is awful. He's so bad.
The badness of it almost helps the weirdness of it in the film. So I didn't know if it was a choice or he was simply unable to do better.
I think in that sense, he's not able to do very well. I think that is just what that is.
This was definitely still in the earlier part of the career when he was not yet leaning heavily into his strengths.
What are his strengths?
His strengths are unflappability, as we referred to earlier.
Unflappability.
Not emoting, and hair. And the Shakespearean scenes do not.
No, you know what he has? He has, his other strength is your ability to find him, like, endearing. I don't know. I got to think about how to phrase this.
Yeah, he has a certain passive charisma.
No, it's not passive charisma. He has, he invites like an emotional connection. That's the weird thing about Keanu, is that even though he plays all these hard-ass action movie guys, or that's what he's become known for, he does invite a little bit of like warmth and accessibility. That's what he brings to this role, too.
So as we continue to search for the centrality of Keanu Reeves to the American cultural experience, do you think this is it that you're articulating now? He's this pool of water upon which we project ourselves and yet feel connected to?
I don't know if it's a pool of water that I project myself to. I'm not 100% sure what you're asking.
Pool of water, if you're listening to this podcast, please tweet at Hemel and let her know how you feel about that.
What's your overall verdict? Where does this fall in the canon for you?
I did not really enjoy it, to be honest. I don't think it gave me a lot to think about, and clearly I have a lot to say about it. I don't know that I enjoyed the experience of watching it. Several times I paused it to see, like, is there a lot more of this? Is there a little more of this? Because the that you have no sense of where you are. And
you're
like, oh, we're reaching the denouement. We're in the third act. There's none of that. None of the markers that you need to tell you where you are in a movie are present.
Yeah, there's no real, there's no traditional structure in the film at all. It mixes up genres willy-nilly.
I feel that this is not high on the list of Keanu movies if you are rating them by their Keanu-ness. If you are rating them by their centrality of Keanu to the Keanu Reeves body of work, this one seems like a total outlier.
Ah, wow. Okay. I don't think I agree with that. I think that this is essential Keanu because it shows what is important to him as an artist.
It did broaden my impression of him as an artist.
That's kind of where I think this falls. I think this is a weird personal passion project, and the fact that he did this movie says a lot about Keanu Reeves.
I will say to the listeners out there, I suspect you will not enjoy this film, but I recommend that you watch the film.
I will say that I think you will enjoy the film, and you will enjoy it greatly, even though it is about 26, 27 years old at this point. I definitely think that it's worth watching.
If you listen to this podcast, you'll be better prepared than I was.
I also think it's a little heartbreaking. And then let us know.
It's tragic. It's a tragedy.
Tragic. And if you have any thoughts, leave them on your Instagram, my Instagram.
Tweet at Hemel. Tweet at me. Tweet at me and tag Hemel. Tweet at Keanu and tag both of us. However you want to get at us.
I'm really curious to see if people like this movie as a Keanu movie or everyone thinks of it as a River Phoenix movie. So somewhere on the internet, let us know how you feel.